And with the stroke of a gavel, a judge can initiate a guardianship, conservatorship, which essentially reduces the person from a fully vested person with all kinds of rights down to having no rights at all.
Welcome everybody to Conversations That Matter. I'm your host, Alex Newman. With us today, a very special guest, an investigative journalist. Her name is Janet Phelan, and she does a number of things. She has a new book out about the pandemic, At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic. I've actually followed Janet's work for many, many years. She has specialized in a number of areas, including one that I have found really interesting, and that is issues related to legal corruption in the conservatorship of adults, a lot out in California. Some of the things that she has uncovered are just horrific. Her articles have appeared in many leading regional and national publications, and she's got blog posts that are very, very interesting, dealing with the forces of good and evil within human nature. Janet, thank you for joining us on the program. Your book, At the Breaking Point of History, absolutely fascinating. Tell us about how decades of U.S. policy and U.S. duplicity enabled this pandemic.
Well, I think when the pandemic hit, most people were surprised. There was some research indicating this event 201, which briefly predated the pandemic. But what I think people don't realize is that preparations for this went back decades. And it is possible to find where these preparations took place. There were changes in domestic law, which would pave the way for no culpability for any US government official. There were extensive lies that were launched at the Biological Weapons Convention in Geneva, which I actually attended twice, both in 2011 and 2016, to basically advise the convention at large that it appeared that the U.S. was in the process of launching a pandemic. So there was a lot of background that I had. So when the pandemic began, I put the book together. It was published by Prime Day, has a lot of juicy details that you simply aren't able to find elsewhere.
Fantastic. And so who do you think should be held responsible for this? Are there any names, individuals, organizations that you think should be fingered for blame here?
Well, I think that when one starts going down this rabbit hole and realizes the extent of the preparations that took place prior to the pandemic, the question of culpability becomes enormous.
Well, who should be held responsible, you think, Janet, and how?
Well, I think it is very clear from multiple vectors that the U.S. was planning this for decades. Now, it does appear that the U.S. has been able to get a lot of cooperation internationally with its pandemic agenda. And I do want to point out that people think that COVID has subsided, that the crisis is over. I think what people do not realize is that the entire COVID scenario is being used to launch a sort of a double-horned imperative at the United Nations, both in terms of amending the international health regulations, which are coming up for a vote on the amendments this month, and also for the WHO's efforts to create a pandemic treaty, which would then, in a sense, give the WHO sovereignty over any sort of response to any future pandemic. Now, that is a matter of grave concern.
So, why should we be so concerned about that, Janet?
Well, what would happen if the IHR regulations are amended and a pandemic treaty is launched, is that essentially national sovereignty over the health of a nation's citizens would become under international control. There would no longer be any pockets of, oh no, we aren't going to do this, we're going to do something else, we're going to give people the latitude to make decisions. It will all fall under the dictates of the pandemic treaty and the changes in the IHR regulations. It will be a one world system for health. And seeing how this played out with the COVID pandemic, there are many individuals, myself included, who do not think this is a good idea.
Yeah, I am also one of those individuals, knowing what I know about the World Health Organization and the UN. So what should be done here, Janet? I mean, if you could wave a wand and bring about policy changes, bring about accountability, bring about the dissolution of agencies or the creation of agencies, how should we be dealing with this pandemic, the next pandemic, and all the rest of it?
I think that we are going to need to really step back and get real about what happened between 2020 and 2022. And along with this getting real, we're going to have to come to terms with the fact that we were sold a bill of goods, and we were sold a bill of goods by the very individuals who are now trying to seize control over global health sovereignty. Now, there is a section in the book in which I go into what appears to be a separate pandemic delivery system, separate from any airborne germs or from any vaccine concerns. And the fact that this alternate pandemic delivery system has been in place over 20 years, and that it appears to be like top secret, we need to grapple with what that means, that the governments, not all governments, but a number of governments have chosen to install a system that can produce a pandemic symptoms without having any of the requirements of a virus or a problematic countermeasure such as a vaccine. We're in a world of lies now, and it is simply my hope that my book will shed some light as to how deep these lies go.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, and now they're saying that climate change is a global public health crisis. They're saying gun violence is a global public health crisis. Racism is a global public health crisis. There seems to be nothing beyond the reach of global public health bureaucrats. It's quite fascinating. Janet, we're going to go to break. When we get back, I want to wrap up on this subject and talk a little bit about some of what you have discovered in your research into these conservatorship issues in the state of California. Folks, stay with us. We're going to be right back here on Conversations That Matter.
They say I'm part of a global plan. I don't think so. It's too hot. It's too cold. You know what? The weather changes.
Here's the news, Dad.
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days.
Ditch the fake news and always get the truth. Go to thenewamerican.com.
Janet, one of the areas that you have worked on a lot for many years, and I followed your work on this some for years and years, is the abuse of elderly people through the legal process, through these things called the conservatorships, where basically the government or someone appointed by the government kind of takes charge of your life, your finances. And you have uncovered a lot of really significant issues, really significant abuses of this process. Talk about your findings.
Well, it's really shocking what's going on. Just to briefly defined terms. Conservatorships are called guardianships in some states. And essentially what happens is that an individual such as you or I can go to court and say, Mrs. XYZ I think she's losing it, right? She can't find her keys, or maybe she's mumbling to herself. And judge, we think she needs a guardian. And without much more evidence than that, and with the stroke of a gavel, a judge can initiate a guardianship, conservatorship, which essentially reduces the person from a fully vested person with all kinds of rights down to having no rights at all. So upon the initiation of a guardianship, even a temporary guardianship, an individual loses access to his funds, his or her funds, loses any semblance of rights to contest guardianship. In many cases, you can't even hire a lawyer to basically go to court and say, wait a minute, this is not in my best interest, I'm not incapacitated, whatever the lawyer might say, you can't even do that. So you lose your rights, you lose access to your property, you lose your decision-making capabilities, for example, where you will live, if your house is sold, if you get to see your family. All of these so-called rights are transferred to the care and protection of the guardian, who is also the one who, generally speaking, who's got all your funds now. So is this a process that is ripe for abuse? I would say it is. Now, what we found, in fact, is that abuses are legion in these cases. And it became clear to me at one point in time that the guardians had an in with the court, that none of these fraudulent accountings, these declarations of, oh, you can't see your family members anymore, we're selling your house, none of this could ever happen without the complicity of the judge. And in many cases, the judges are ignoring the law in order to serve up the elder to the guardian. So I began to focus in on the judge. Like, what's in it for the judge? I mean, is this just a constitution-hating individual who hates old people, who wants to destroy everyone who comes in front of them, but doing it very suavely and nicely? Or what's going on? Or is the judge being somehow compensated for his or her illegal rulings? And I stumbled upon a process by which it appears that judges are being paid off under the table in order to throw these cases. And using a particular research process, which involves public documents, which people can simply usually get online or also by contacting a state agency, because every judge has to file a financial declaration every year saying, you know, did they get any contributions? Did they do this or that? So basically with two levels of documents, which are the documents that are lodged with the county recorder having to do with loans, also the financial disclosures that have to be filed with the state, with these two levels of documents, one can make a reasonable determination if a judge is actually on the take. And what is really shocking here is that I've been doing this research now for a number of years, and I've intervened in a number of cases with this research. And roughly speaking, I'd say that 2/3 of the judges I've researched have mortgage histories redolent of money laundering and bribe taking. That's an awful lot.
So what do we do about it, Janet? Are there any reforms that you think could be undertaken at the state level to try to rein in some of these abuses while still leaving tools in place for people who genuinely need some kind of help?
Oh, I think there's a lot that can be done. I noted that a few years ago, a group in the state of Washington picked up on the research process and approached the office of the U.S. attorney there after having researched some judges. When the U.S. attorney refused to act, they turned the research process on the U.S. attorney and essentially chased her out of office. And I think that I now hold online classes teaching people how to do the research. It's not that difficult. And I think that when the light begins to go on in people's heads, that their honorable so-and-so is actually a paid off actor who is in place to destroy their rights, not to enforce their rights. I think when this becomes common knowledge, I think we're going to start seeing changes.
Wonderful. Jan, what's the best way to follow your work? Of course, tell us where's the best place to get the book and how can people follow your excellent writing?
Well, thank you. I write for Activist Post, so I would encourage people to go to Activist Post. It's free. You don't have to subscribe. And they have a whole stable of writers who are really, I think, doing marvelous work. My book, At the Breaking Point of History, is published by Trine Day and is available on Amazon as well.
Excellent. Well, Janet, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for the work that you are doing. Please keep us updated.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. All righty, folks. That was Janet Phelan. This is Alex Newman for Conversations That Matter. Thanks for tuning in. Till next time, God bless you all.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code N20, END20.